I've titled my sermon today, Promises and Maths. And yes, there will be a short maths lesson at some point, but you've got to stay around for it. So we'll be looking at the prophets of old and how they foretold the coming of Jesus so many hundreds of years before he actually came. Now, I'm not sure about you, but I know that if I get told something's going to happen or something's going to come, I'll be constantly looking for it, waiting for it and expecting it. Oh yeah, better remember to take baby Jesus. They're needing the doll for out there for the play. It's like, for me, it's like waiting for that parcel to arrive in the mail, and as time goes by, I'm still waiting, and it's not arrived, and you kind of look a little bit less each day, and, you know, as the weeks and maybe months go on, if I'm honest, you kind of give up a little bit, don't you? It's like, is it really going to come? And I'd be feeling rather disappointed, you know, my hopes had gone up to expect this present, and then, yeah, they go down. Well, I want to remind you that God is a faithful God, and he keeps his promises. Hundreds of years before Jesus was born, prophets spoke of his coming. They spoke of his place of birth, his lineage, what he would do, and how he would suffer for us. And so today we're going to take a quick trip back in time and look at some of the prophecies about Jesus and his birth. Now, I don't know if you know this about me, but I love Doctor Who. Sorry, I do. I think it's great. I'm looking forward to the new one coming out. And so we're going to get in our TARDIS today and travel back in time, all the way back to the mid-8th century BC. And it's here that we're going to look for two prophets, two men of God that clearly had something to say. Now, this is a time when people were turning away from God. They were worshipping idols and objects. Well, that sounds a bit familiar, doesn't it? And God had sent these men to stand up and speak on his behalf. So who were these two men? And what are we looking for? Where are they? Well, the first one is Isaiah, a man whose words are well known to us through the scriptures. And it's from him that we can find out some really interesting information about Jesus and his coming. Isaiah 7:14 says, "Therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel." Isaiah 9:6, "For unto us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." Very well-known words. And finally, Isaiah 11:1, "A shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. From his roots, a branch will bear fruit." So what was Isaiah telling the people? He was saying that God was actually sending someone to help them. Someone that will be born in a miraculous way, born of a virgin, and whose name would mean God is with us. He'd be a person of strength, holding the government on his shoulders. He'd be a counselor, someone that comes alongside, supports, listens, and he would be mighty. Is that strength again? Everlasting, and he would be the Prince of Peace. This would have been a welcome news for the people of this time, because it was not a time of peace back then. It was not a time of stability. In fact, it was a time of invasion and of unrest. People being carried off to far-flung lands if he actually survived the invasion. And I can just imagine the people of that time hearing this news from Isaiah and saying, "Oh yeah, we need this person. Bring him on now. We need him right now." And I was thinking about that and I thought, gosh, that sounds really familiar to me. On the farm, we're going in the middle of starting a hay season. In fact, we're quite well into it now. And for us at home, it's almost like when the baler breaks down and we're waiting for that really crucial part. And the baler, instead of putting out these tight, well-shaped, decent bales that can be stacked and stored for later, instead the hay is just a pile of cut grass on the ground, gathering dew, everyone and everything trampling on it. When's that coming? When's that part coming? We need it. We need it now. But we have to wait. Unfortunately, Norwood's, not quite as good as God on delivering. But that's another story. So let's look around a bit more for that second person. Micah. Micah also lived at the same time of Israel. And it's from Micah we know where Jesus was going to be born. In fact, Micah's very own words were repeated to Herod when the wise men had arrived at Herod's palace and gone and approached him and said, well, where's this newborn king? Well, Herod wasn't happy to hear about a newborn king. And he in turn turned to his leading priests and religious people of the law and asked them, well, where is this person? Where is this baby? Where is this newborn king? And they replied with words of Micah. So what did Micah say? How did they know where to go find this baby? But you, Bethlehem, Ephrathah, I'm not sure on that one, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from old, from ancient times. Here Micah is plainly saying where Jesus is going to be born. He describes Jesus as the one who will be ruler over Israel. This ruler, a king whose origins could be traced back to the ancient times, was going to be born in this tiny, smallest of small country towns. Now we're going to pop back into our TARDIS again. Quick jump forward in time to 100 years. And this is the time of Jeremiah. By now, the northern kingdom of Israel had totally fallen to the Babylonians. And shortly after, the southern kingdom of Judah, they also were taken over. And it's here in this time period that we see the really sad destruction of Jerusalem and the temple being totally destroyed. And this would have been just absolutely devastating to the Israelites because their spiritual home is just gone. It's just rubble. And it's a time of seemingly hopelessness. And it's in this time that Jeremiah has been sent to speak to the people. Oops. Oh, it's not gone. Oh, I know. I was trying to make the font bigger and doing two things at once, plugged in the projector for out there and my thing got wiped. These are the days that are coming, declares the Lord. So this is Jeremiah 23, 5 to 6. These are the days that are coming, declares the Lord, when I will raise up for David a righteous branch, a king who will reign wisely and do what is just and right in the land. Excuse me. In his days, Judah will be saved and Israel will live in safety. This is the name by which he will be called, the Lord, our righteous Saviour. Here, Jeremiah is clearly telling the people that this king would be a descendant of David, but one that would rule with more wisdom, more justice, and more righteousness than any other king had ever done before. And this king would not only rescue his people from their oppressors, in this case it would be the Babylonians, but also reunite this divided kingdom of Israel and Judea. Of Judah, sorry. And we can see from these few verses that the birth of Jesus was a much foretold event. The Old Testament records more than over 300 times where the prophets predict details about Jesus' birth, his life, and his death. That Jesus was born in Bethlehem of a virgin from the line of Abraham was no accident, but it was predicted by the prophets centuries before his birth. It was like God was providing this roadmap, foretelling this coming of his son, something that the people could follow and look for. In 1944, 1 year before the World War II ended, there was a guy called Professor Peter Stoner. He was a professor of mathematics. I can't stand maths. And he did a study to calculate just how likely it would be for Jesus to fulfill just 8 of these prophecies. And the chances are pretty minuscule. Just 1 in 100 quadrillion. He also worked out that the probability that Jesus had filled just 48 of the hundreds of the Old Testament prophecies was 1 in 10 to the power of 157. That's 10 with 157 zeros behind it. If you want to count them, they are all there. And Rachel taught me this because numbers do my head in. A number with 100 zeros behind it is called a googol. That's where Google gets its name from. 10 to the power of 157 is a googol and a half, or just over. And there's your math lesson, okay? Got that? Right, you'll be sweet for NCA now, won't you? There are many other prophecies in the Old Testament about the coming of the Messiah. And some of them we know really well. We hear them every year, almost every year. And some we don't hear so often, but they are there. But they're all words that God has spoken through his prophets. In other words, these are God's promises to his people, both back in the Ancient of Days, and also for today. Our God is a faithful God. He keeps his promises to us, just as he did when he sent his son so many years ago to be born of a virgin in a small town called Bethlehem. And we can also see from our very short math lesson that even though the chances of all these promises coming true are minuscule, are tiny, all things are possible for God. And we can also see from this that when God promises something, he will always follow through on that promise. We need to remember the promises that God has given to the Israelites through his prophets. Looking back, we can see that even though they had to wait some time, his promises did come true. They came to fruition. God has given us many promises through his word. And looking back, we can see some have come true and some we're still waiting to come true. But we can see and we know from his word that he does and he will honour those promises that he's made. God has given us these promises throughout all of his scripture, that he's always with us. He's right there beside us in times of trial. He's never going to leave us, never going to forsake us. No matter how far we go, he's always there right beside us. And then there's also the promises he gives us individually. These might be times when he's spoken to you individually, to you personally, through someone else bringing a word to you, or through the scriptures when you've been reading them. These promises, these individual promises just for you, he will honour them, he will keep them. And sometimes we need to go back and refresh our memory of what he said and what he's going to do, where he might be leading you. But I just want to remind you to hold on to those promises. I know sometimes we can feel a little bit like the Israelites all those years ago, waiting, not knowing when something's going to happen, but they will happen in God's time. And that parcel will finally arrive at your front door. The postie hasn't forgotten it. And there's the parcel. Yeah, didn't go. I'd like to move into a time of communion now. Can I get a couple of people to help me bring the table forward? That'd be cool, yeah, just there, it's fine. Thank you. as we move into a time of communion, I'd like us to remember not only God's promises to us, but our promises to him. Jesus, when he was here on earth, promised that he would come again. But in the meantime, he actually asked us to do something for him. He asked us to almost promise to do this in memory of him. And as we come before the communion table, let's honour that promise to God as we remember the sacrifice that he gave for us and as he poured out his life for us. Let's remember that. And let us come before him now and honour him and thank him for it. Do we have any people to serve? Oh, have we got some? Thank you.